you. Well, I'm, can I stand or do I have to sit or?
It's up to you, whatever would make you comfortable.
Well, I don't know if I'm ever comfortable doing this stuff, but I'm Jerry. I'm an abstinent food addict and compulsive eater. And as you can see, that's what I looked like before. So I'll pass this around. Actually, I started out in Region 7. I grew up in Easton, Pennsylvania, across the river. But I was well in my disease when I moved south to Florida. I was 27, and I went on and ate for 16 more years. So I was 43 when I got to Overeaters Anonymous. And once before I moved to Florida, I went over 200 pounds in what I like to call my eating career. And I love to diet, so I would gain up to like maybe 150 and then diet down to 110 and then up to 160 and down to 120. And that's the way it went for me for 23 years. I was a yo-yo dieter, a definite compulsive overeater, and later I learned I was a food addict too, which means I'm addicted to certain foods. When I start eating them, I can't stop. So let's see, what do I want to tell you? I moved to Florida when I was 27. At that time, I was in a smaller body. I had a husband who kind of kept his thumb on me and watched what I ate. And but he didn't watch that close because I went over 200 pounds again. And that time I went to about 225. And then I lost that weight again and then gained in 1993, I'm going to just slip through. You know, I got a lot of little war stories I can tell you about the food, but I want to get to the good stuff, which is my recovery. Mm-hmm. So I was, I want to tell you about my bottom. I was, I hit 248, and that's about what that picture is. I was in January of 1993, and I started having heart palpitations. You know, I always say, you know, I'm fat, but I'm healthy, you know. Mm-hmm. And I could diet, so I, you know, I wasn't worried about it. But I went to the doctor, starting to have heart palpitations, and he put one of those heart monitors on me for the weekend, and I came back, and I was really scared. I thought I was having a heart attack, and he said, "Do you know what your problem is?" And I said, "What?" He said, "You're morbidly obese." I was like, "Morbidly obese?" That was just so shocking to me to hear those words, but. You know, when you weigh 248 and you're wearing a size 24, that's pretty heavy, you know. So I left there and I went to, the WW Club, where I never got to be a lifetime member because whenever I get too close to a goal, guess what I did? I went out and celebrated with food. And then once I started, I couldn't stop. So I was pretty close to having, back then they called it stomach stapling, but my insurance didn't cover it, so I would have had to pay for that out of my pocket. So I left the doctor's office, went to the WW Club, and I prepaid for a whole year. That should do it, right, when you attach money? Well, I left there and went to a cold, creamy place and binged, and that was it. I said, you know, if I'm going to die, I'm going to die happy. Isn't that sad? That was what my life had gotten down to, that it was just me and my best friend food. So I kept eating. I went up. I didn't want to see the scale over 250, so guess what I did? I stopped weighing myself. And I went up two more dress sizes. So my top weight could be close to 300, I don't know. But I had a very wise sponsor who told me early on, don't worry about those numbers. So I'm a recovered drama queen. 100 is enough, right? So I round it and say I've lost over 100 pounds at least. And I've been maintaining it for the 20 years I've been in Overeaters Anonymous. Mm-hmm. So I went to, I worked in Florida on right off International Drive, if any of you have ever been down there. And on my way home from work, I stopped at 7-Eleven. And I do mention food. It's not intended to get you excited or anything. It's part of my story. I'd rather you say that round thing with a hole in the middle of it, say donut, and then I'll know, and I'm not worried about it being a defective pizza or something. I know what it is, so I can just move on in my mind. So I came home from work. I stopped at the 7-Eleven. I bought two frozen Dove bars, inhaled them, stopped at Burger King, grabbed a burger, fries, shake, drove another 3 miles to my house. Now, can you imagine how fast you have to eat to get that down in 3 miles? Pull in my cul-de-sac, and the theme song from The Love Story is playing in my head. And I walk in and expecting my husband to greet me, you know, and our 2.5 children would be in bed sleeping, and he would have dinner all prepared. And my reality hit me. He was in the living room nursing a hangover watching Star Trek. I have no children. I've never had any children of my own. And no dinner was prepared. I didn't get a martini, any of that stuff. In fact, I've never drank a martini, but every time I drive down the road, I pictured him giving me a martini. But so he went back to bed to nurse his hangover so he could go back to work at the, he worked in a nude bar, okay? The waiters and the bartenders wore clothes. The men wore clothes, but the dancers didn't. So I hit the lowest point in my life that night, and I went in the kitchen, and I cooked a whole chicken, a whole box of pasta. Now, remember, I binged the whole way home, right? And I ate all of that. I thought my stomach would burst open. I was so full. And then I was eating something, I don't know, pretzels or popcorn or something, drinking champagne, watching TV, thinking there's got to be more to life than this. And he went to work, and I just started thinking of how to kill myself. And then I thought, well, who could I call? I couldn't even think of anybody to call. So my life had gotten down to me and my best friend, which was food. And now food wasn't working either. So I thought about getting a gun. We had a gun, and I thought about blowing my brains up. And then I thought, oh, what will my mom think if my brains are on the wall? You know, worried about what my mom would think kept me from doing a lot of bad things in my life. But I just laid there, and I started to cry, and I said, God, help me. And he did. I passed out. I didn't believe in God anymore because I was mad at him because I didn't get what I wanted when I was 27. And you know, he was Santa Claus God. And so, but he did protect me that night. I didn't kill myself. And I just got up with my little miserable life the next morning. But a couple days later, my husband got a DUI on the way home from work. And that was the start of a change in our lives. And he, part of that sentencing in Florida is you've got to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. So he started going to AA, and he stopped drinking. He got sober, which was really cool. But see, I figured then he was going to need me, right, to haul him around in the car because he wouldn't have a, you know, they take your driver's license. But he just got a business permit. So he's getting a life. He's starting to be happy. You know, he's not drinking. And I'm miserable. And I started to complain to a girl at work who I knew, she told me once she was an alcoholic. And she also is a recovered bulimic. And she, you know what she said to me? You know what? You're powerless over food and your life's unmanageable. And I said, well, I'm not powerless over food. I diet really good. She said, you haven't been on a good diet that's worked for you in over 2 years, if you'll admit it. And she was right. And she said, There is this place that you can go to that's like where your husband's going, but it's for food. It's called Overeaters Anonymous. And she gave me a book to read that day, and it wasn't an OA-approved book, but when I read this book, it also talked about OA in the book, and I was just like, to read what other people were doing with food that was the same as I was doing was just like a miracle, because, you know, I ate in private, and hid wrappers. I mean, I did all that crazy stuff with food, and I knew nobody else was doing that. So she got me to my first OA meeting, and that was May 15th, 1993. They said, get a sponsor, but nobody was available to sponsor. So I went to another OA meeting the next night. In Central Florida, you can go to a meeting at least every day. There's at least one a day. There must be about 40 meetings a month there. So I went the next night, and they made a circle, and they said that, well, they did that part about who's a sponsor, and this really beautiful woman named Beverly raised her hand. She said, I'm a sponsor. And she didn't say she wasn't available. I thought, hot dang. So I waited till the end, you know, keep coming back. It works if you work. Give a lot of love. Give a lot of hugs. Hi, Beverly. My name's Jerry. Would you be my sponsor? You know, and she said, yes. I was like, oh, this is great. And then she told me this weird thing. She said, call me tomorrow morning, tell me your food plan, and I want you to call two other people too. Like, okay, Beverly. Guess what? This is what I call grace. I did it. I wrote down my food plan. I called Beverly. I told her what. And then who was I going to call? I got some numbers of people from that meeting, and the only two people I could call were fatter than me. Because why would those skinny girls want to talk to somebody like me? You know, I had low self-esteem and shame. None of those people would want to talk to me. So I called the other two fat ones. And they would talk to me, and they called me back, too. But the sad thing, I don't know what happened to the girl. The one was a guy, and he died about 5 years later in his apartment. He was dead 5 days before anybody found him. Oh. So that's the isolation of our disease. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some people say, well, food can't kill you like alcohol. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, it can. It's a lot longer and more painful mm-hmm. than alcohol. Mm-hmm. And but I just, everything Beverly would tell me to do, I would do. And I got the books, you know, I got the OA 12 because the traditions weren't written yet. So I bought that book, and I bought a For Today, and I bought a big book, and I was going to take the steps better than that man I was married to, you know. I figured 12 steps, 12 weeks, I'd lose 100 pounds and get out of there, right? Well, as you can see, it's a few more hours than 12 weeks, I'm still here. Each week I would take a step, and I'd go do the step with Beverly, and the fourth week I was doing a fourth step, and she hadn't done her fifth step yet. She was only abstinent 3 months. But that meant so much to me because I thought, oh my God, if she could do it 3 months, I could do it too. You know, there was a couple people around then that had a year or two, and then some people that had five. I didn't care about them. I wanted to hear what Beverly was doing. I wanted to hear what somebody else was doing for 3 months, you know. So, you know, time started going by. I lost this 100 pounds in a year, you know. And I want to tell you, though, you know that story about pink clouds? Did you ever hear of a pink cloud where everything's going la, 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 la? Well, mine didn't last very long. It was like the rug pulled out from underneath me at about 4 weeks of abstinence. I started to get memories from childhood on why I started eating like that. So I got into therapy. So the next 5 years of my recovery, I not only went to OA almost every day, but I also got some help for my emotional problems. And both the big book and the OA book talk about that some of us do need a little extra help with the emotional side of our recovery. So I did separate from my alcoholic husband. We eventually got a divorce, and he died last year sober. So I'm very glad for him for that. But, you know, it was like they say, you came, and then you came to, and you came to belief. Well, I came, and then I came to, and I looked at him and said, who are you? You know, the truth was, we went out on a date, and he never went home. And 4 weeks later, drunk as skunks, we got married. You know, that's, you know... You know, if you like me, I'll probably marry you. You know, I had a little problem with that too, but that's another 12-step fellowship. So, you know, I want to tell you, recovery is like putting an octopus to bed. You get the food arm under the cover, and out will pop the sex arm. You get that down there, and then maybe the alcohol arm will pop out. Or shopping, I love that one. I'm not going to get a 12-step fellowship for that one. You know, so here I was dealing with all these things in my life. And like I said, my husband and I separated. And then I really fell apart emotionally because I was doing all this work in therapy. I lost my big, fat, paying job. And I took a 30% cut in pay. And I fell apart again, and by the end of the year, I was making 50% of what I was making. I went into financial insecurity, and I started racking up credit card debt, but you know what I knew? I knew I could, if I just gave myself that time to get better, things would get better. So for 5 years, I just subsidized my income with a credit card. So I was 5 years abstinent and $32,000 in unsecured debt. Mm. But I started to get my sea legs back under me, you know? So I was able after that to go ahead back into my previous career field, and I got a good paying job again and just started to chunk away at those bills. And I want you to know that I did eventually pay off all that debt, and I now have money in the bank, mm-hmm. you know? So I really feel good about that too, because that was important to me to take care of all the affairs of my life. So, also, another thing happened to me at 5 years of abstinence. There was this, not Beverly, but somebody else was sponsoring me by that time, and I had heard about this thing called intergroup. And I said to my sponsor, what is intergroup? She goes, oh, don't go there. She said, that's it's a bunch of fat women sitting around knitting. You don't want to go there. I said, well, could I go see what it looks like? I'd like to see this. She said, well, go ahead, but don't say I didn't warn you. And I went, and it was pretty close. They weren't knitting, but most of the people were obese. And they just were given these long, drawn-out reports, and I thought, oh, this is awful. But you should never go to intergroup if you don't have a life, and I didn't really have a life there, so I left as the treasurer. I got that job. And I didn't like it, but you know what? I left it in better shape than I found it. And so I did that work for about a year, and I'll tell you, if you get into intergroup and you want to get out of a job you don't like, train your sponsee how to do it. And then your sponsee can do that job. And that's what I did. One of my sponsees learned, she liked Excel spreadsheets, so she started being she went out for treasurer, and I went for vice chair. I got elected. And 2 months later, the chair quit. Like, oh boy. So I got to be the chairman of Central Florida Intergroup. And you know, I want to tell you about this because God kept laying something on my heart. The more abstinent you get, the more clear you get, and the more that channel opens up between you and God. Mm-hmm. Something I learned about steps 1, 2, and 3 is, step 1, I admitted I was powerless. That's pretty powerless, right? My life was pretty unmanageable. And step 2, I came to believe, and if they ever asked me to write the steps over, I'd help them with this. I'd say that I came to believe that there was a power greater than me and greater than food that could restore me to sanity, because food is what made my life so crazy. And then I took step 3 and I turned my will and my life over to the care of God instead of the care of food. And guess what I got? I got my power back, because I got a higher power. So I think the steps are all about giving you power back. And if you would ask me today if I'm powerless over food, you know what I'd tell you? I'd say, no, I'm not, because I have a higher power. Mm-hmm. However, I can give that up anytime I go to that refrigerator in between meals. Then that food becomes a power greater than myself. And I may as well get down on my knees right then and there and pray to that food, because that's how powerful it is. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to live like that again. Because my life is, you know how you do that little thing about beyond your wildest dreams? My life is beyond my wildest dreams. I don't want my will anymore. I used to think, oh, God's will, that's got to be so boring. Because I pictured God's will as going to church every Sunday and getting Holy Communion and going home and being bad the rest of the week. You know, I just didn't want that for myself. But what I got in my life was this relationship with a power greater than myself that I feel so blessed. And what I found out is God's will means abundance, and Jerry's will means limiting. Mm-hmm. Because I can think of a whole lot of really cool things to do, but I can't think of all of them. Mm-hmm. And I can't think of all the things that God would want for me in my life. So when I catch myself now getting into self-will, I say, ooh, help me, will you? And I try to get back into God's will. And this has been a beautiful thing for me. And my life is just, I mean, wow. It's amazing. Now, the truth, I know our leader told you I came here from Florida. Well, I didn't really. I came here from Sacramento, California. Because last year in March, my husband and I took off in a motorhome. And we're traveling across the United States in this little house on wheels, you know. And when I tell you beyond my wildest dreams, it is just, that's an underestimate of what's going on in my life. I met a man that I fell in love with. When I was 5 years abstinent, first husband and I, after 5 years of separation, got a divorce. Very painful when you're abstinent and you can feel. I'd been through one before that, and I couldn't feel a thing. I could tell you what I wore and what I drank the night before, but I couldn't tell you how I felt. But it was very painful to get a divorce from him. But he, you know, he ended up marrying somebody else, and he had a good life. And I really wanted a nice guy in my life. But you know what happened? I went from being a woman of substance abuse to becoming a woman of substance. Mm. That is what OA did for me. I had values, I had integrity, I knew what I wanted, and I was never going to settle again. Now, if I thought about, do you like me? Well, do I like you? So a friend of mine encouraged me to write a letter to God and tell God what I wanted in a man. I said, that's the craziest thing I ever heard of. She says, is that any crazier than asking God to help you with what you're going to eat for breakfast tomorrow morning? I said, well, no, you got a good point there. So I wrote the letter, and she said, be very specific, because, you know, the girl that told me to do this, her husband was living downstairs from her, and she didn't know him. She lived in that apartment a whole year. She wrote this letter to God and met him the next day at the mailbox. Mm-hmm. And a year later, they got married. So I said, wow, if it worked for her, I'm going to write all this. If you ever want to do that, I'm going to tell you to be very specific, because in the meantime, I'm writing this, and I'm taking a long, good time to do it, a couple of days, you know, and in the meantime, one of my girlfriends fixed me up on a blind date. Very nice man, but when he smiled, his teeth were all rotten. So I quick went home, and I said, God, if it's not too late, could he please have good dental hygiene? So I wrote the letter, and they asked me to lead a retreat up in Jacksonville. I went up there, and those women must have thought I was nuts, because I said, God's going to put a man in my life. And they're, okay, Jerry. Do you know what? Like within a week of me getting down on my knees and praying that prayer, somebody sent me a link to, this is like the precursor of these online dating things, AOL's Love Connection. And somebody sent me a link, click here for a hug, and I linked, and here's this boyfriend grocery store. It's, oh, he can't be in there, right? Well, a couple days later, I said, maybe he is in there, you know? So I went back and looked, and guess what? I met my husband at AOL's Love Connection. And we dated for a year, and then he put a ring on my finger, and we got married, all in order, instead of, you know, going on a date and, you know, living together and then getting married like I did the first time, you know. So, and my husband is just perfect for me. He really is. Is he perfect? No, he's not, but he's perfect for me. And I think you almost have to be something of an addict to be with an addict, you know. So I was trying to figure out what he could be addicted to, and maybe it's football, because he goes into withdrawal after the Super Bowl, and he stays like that until the college picks or something, you know. But there's no 12-step fellowship for that, so yeah, he's all right. Yeah. Oh, there is one? Oh. Anyway, you know, like I was telling you, my life has really become wonderful, and I do a lot of service for Overeaters Anonymous. At the end of, I served for 3 years as the trustee for Region 8. Do you know what a trustee is? We're like the link between World Service, that's in Rio Rancho, New Mexico, and our local region. So we carry information from the region to World Service, and then carry information from World Service back to our regions. But you have to live in your region for 6 months of the year. And we knew we wanted to go on this big, long RV trip. We stayed in the region 1 year, and we just did the Southeast states. But my husband really wanted to travel more, so I made a decision not to run for a second term, and then I ran for General Service Trustee. So do you know what that is?
No.
There's 11 region and virtual trustees, 10 regions, and then one that serves the virtual world for telephone and online meetings. And Region 8, I want to tell you about that, is all the Southeast states plus all of South and Central America and the Caribbean islands. Mm-hmm. So doing service for Overeaters Anonymous, I got to go to Colombia and Venezuela and Costa Rica and all this travel because I'm doing service for Overeaters Anonymous. Wow. So, I mean, when somebody asks you to do service, you know, maybe you don't want to carry literature or something like that, but look where it could lead to. You could be an international traveler, you know? Maybe not in Region 7 because you guys are kind of populated dense, but look, here I am here. I met Maria from your region at a OA meeting in Florida. And then she was asking me, for a couple of years, she asked me to come up here for this convention, but while I was working in Region 8, it was too much, so that's why I'm finally here, because I'm not doing that service anymore. And now the General Service Trustees, they're the ones that dot the I's and cross the T's. We manage the World Service Office, there's six of us, and we are responsible for the budget of Overeaters Anonymous, and we just did that work last week in Albuquerque, so the board will vote on it in 3 weeks again in Albuquerque. And Albuquerque is a really wonderful city. So how many of you have ever been a delegate to the World Service Business Conference? want. Oh, you get, it's the most. And how many have been to intergroup? How many have been to region? Well, if you could picture region on steroids, that's yeah, what World Service is like. Very Robert's Rules, mm-hmm. and but it's wonderful. It's, and I have friends all over the world because of Overeaters Anonymous. I mean, I've spoken in England. I was invited to come over there and lead a retreat in England, you know. So I've been to Mexico, been to Hawaii, you know. No, I haven't been to Hawaii, sorry. I want to go to Hawaii, but I haven't been invited there yet. But, you know, you're going to, it's just, it opens doors for you you just never would have imagined. I also want to tell you, you can be abstinent anywhere. If you take the steps, use the tools, and live by the traditions of Overeaters Anonymous, your life will change. I have been to Paris, France with my husband on vacation, and I was abstinent there. In fact, we were talking at dinner. I got a gift in Paris. We stayed in this little bed and breakfast, and my husband was eating all that stuff that's not on my food plan. But it was very aromatic, and I smelled it, and I said, "Oh, your food smells so good." And I realized I wasn't salivating. I was like, wow. And that's when I realized that the sense of taste and the sense of smell are two different senses. And now I can smell certain foods and enjoy that and thank God for that gift of aroma. And not that doesn't mean I have to eat that food, you know. So that was pretty cool. But like I said, you can be abstinent anywhere. We've gone on cruises. And last night I went to a Chinese buffet with my brothers and sisters. They live over in Easton, so I was over visiting my mom and dad. And, you know, I know what I'm going to eat, and then I eat that food. And, they made a lot more trips, but I feasted on the relationship with my brother and sister and their families. And it was much tastier than any of that food on that buffet. You know, so I eat today to nourish my body and not my addiction. And it's okay. Now, I know there's some segments of OA that say, I heard this once in a meeting, my food doesn't sing and dance. Well, mine does. I'm somebody who likes a lot of flavor in my food. I do a lot of cooking, and my food tastes really good. If it didn't, I probably wouldn't be abstinent for 20 years. I have some bottom lines foods that I don't eat. I don't eat sugar, and I don't eat flour. But that leaves me a whole bunch of other things that I can eat. So I don't feel deprived anymore. Food really deprived me of living a life and being present in myself and present in the lives of other people. And today, my goal is to be of maximum service to the people around me and to God's will. And it's a great way to live. And like I said, you can go anywhere you want. And I don't care who gives me love on a plate. You know, you got a mom like that. I made this just for you. I got all the answers today. Thank you very much. I know you love me very much. Do you mind if I eat it later? Set it down, walk away, and that's that, you know. Or I'm full. Do you mind if I eat it later? You know, they don't know. They don't care. They just want you to accept their love on a plate. And so I can do that today. I don't have to say, no, you know I don't eat that stuff. You know, I went through a phase like that where I just made everybody around me miserable, and I don't do that anymore, you know. My brother Tom, he says I've got great willpower. Don't try to explain to a normie that willpower has nothing to do with it. I tried that with him and said, oh, no, you got great willpower. So I decided to change my higher power's name to Will. So now when he says, I've never seen anybody with willpower like you, I say, you know what, you're right, Tom. I got great willpower. So, you know, you can have fun with it. You don't have to walk around looking like, you know, you're dead. Who would be attracted to OA if we all walked around looking like we're sucking lemons? I don't look like that. I also think it's very important to express physical, emotional, and spiritual recovery. I mean, I when I get up in the morning, I have an hour of quiet time for myself. My husband knows this. He stays in bed for an extra hour so I can have my quiet time. I get up, I read some piece of OA literature. Right now I'm reading The Voices of Recovery. And then I journal on what I read every day. I share that with some people. I pray and meditate. And then I also write down my food for the day. And I email it to my sponsor. I also do a 10th step using the, if you read the big book, page 86 has a lot of good questions on it. So I did this written 10th step that has those questions, and it has the list of all the tools so I can see which ones I used the day before. And I don't do a 10th step at night. I know you're supposed to do it the night before. I just can't. I'm too tired. So I do it first thing in the morning. And I don't think God's going to punish me for that. It works. And you can do whatever works for you too. And then throughout the day, I do use the tools. I make phone calls. I continue to take the steps by taking sponsees through the steps. I have a bridge line, and I sponsor a lot of people. And we get together on the phone on Tuesday nights, and we do a step. And we got all the way through the steps, then we went all the way through the traditions, and then did the tools, and now we're back to doing the steps again. And I also study the traditions because the traditions teach you how to live in a group. The OA steps will teach you how to not commit suicide. And then the traditions will help you not to commit homicide. And then if you do service, you want to do the concepts of service, and they'll keep you from committing genocide. So that's kind of how I live. I'm happy, I'm joyous, I'm free. I wouldn't want to go back to food. I mean, if somebody would hand me something today to eat that's not on my food plan, I don't want it. And if you stick around long enough, you won't want it either. You'll want the life that recovery has to give to you. So how's that? Is that long enough?
That's beautiful.
All right. Thanks for letting me share.